Hale. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls until we ask for them. We have a very special guest this evening, Kevin Bearley, who comes to us from Southern California, and Kevin has his own radio program down there, doing a great job educating the people in Southern California, just as we're trying to educate the people in Northern California about what's really going on in the world today. Now, we're going to be talking, at least in part, about the move towards the world government, and you may have an idea that, certainly our government's taken a stand against the United Nations, and we're going to go alone, and we're not going to depend on the United Nations, but you must understand that the major thrust behind the move towards world government has always come from the United States. The United Nations building was built here. We have been the major financier of the United Nations. Although President Reagan withdrew from UNESCO, we've gone back into UNESCO. And of course, we are still funding so much of their world population control efforts. And certainly, we were the ones who were pushing this whole idea of the European Union and, of course, the American Union, which will be coming down the line, because these are all stepping stones uniting Europe, the Western Hemisphere, and then Asia, and then molding the three independent organizations into this one world dictatorship under a ruling elite. Because that's really what it's always been. There's always been this desire. It started with Nimrod back at the time of the building of the Temple of Babel. It was very, very prominent in certainly in Greek thought. This is what Plato wrote about, his story of lost Atlantis, where you had this superior race, and of course they were destroyed by a great flood. But this whole idea, one day we were going to have this republic, this idea with a ruling elite, a so-called just ruler, and then of course everybody else enslaved under the rulers. And that was the purpose of Alexander the Great. He was going to conquer the world. And we're told he died because there are no more worlds to conquer. He probably died of syphilis, but he was deeply involved with the occult, as was Aristotle and Plato before them. And for those who would like to verify that, the book is Plutarch's The Life of Alexander, and I believe it's translated by a man named Scott Hively, H-I-V-L-E-Y. Anybody who wants the exact references to find, of course, how Alexander the Great was involved with the mysteries. And then, of course, we can fast forward to the time of Rome, when Rome wanted to rule the world, and they've been tried many, many times since then. Certainly Napoleon wanted to dominate all of Europe, and Adolf Hitler wanted a new order. And of course, that strong occult ties at the time of Adolf Hitler, this is why, although most people don't understand what really happened, but Adolf Hitler was a product not only of the occult, he was also a product that was produced right here in America. We have, if you read our Iraq, the Untold Story syllabus, you'll find certainly the letter sent by the American ambassador, Ambassador Dodd, to Colonel House, talking about how, of course, why are American corporations building up the Nazi war machine, the German war machine? They can't even get any money out because of exchange controls. So Adolf Hitler was created. We tried, sort of an experiment in creating this new world order. And well, now, of course, again, we're moving towards one nation which will dominate the world, and eventually, of course, they'll fail. The idea, of course, is to use this as a stepping stone so that after the coming great war, everybody in the world will be quite willing to accept the new world order, the new world economic system, the new world currency, and, of course, that new world religion to replace outmoded Christianity. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and with us is Kevin Bearley. Hi, Kevin. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, Dr. Stan. How are things up there in Northern California?
Yeah, I think winter's upon us. Anyway, but it's a wonderful time of year, and we see the leaves falling off. And, of course, we know that as this happens, why, spring is not far with the rebirth of life. And, of course, that's the cycle that the world has gone through since it first began. So, but tell us, you've done a lot of work on this move towards world government. How do you see the things unfolding, and how does this all fit together in your scheme of things?
Well, I've been a student of this basically since I was a young teenager because of the influence of my parents and really all of my aunts and uncles and grandparents. Got involved in an organization, started doing a lot of reading, and began to give me books, send me to what were then not video presentations, but 16-millimeter presentations. And I was exposed to a man by the name of Robert Welch, who began talking about this. He didn't use the term New World Order at the time, but that there was an agenda by these powerful elitists to bring about world government. So I've been basically raised on that. And what I'm concerned about right now with our organization, the Welch Foundation, you know, we have battle after battle in this war to, you can say, retain or regain our Western civilization. Right now, I think the thing that I am most concerned about is this free trade area of the Americas, this super NAFTA. You were talking about globalism, world government, and I agree. I see it happening in incremental phases. Richard Gardner, writing in Foreign Affairs, the official journal of the Council on Foreign Relations back in 1974.
April of 1974, right, yeah. Foreign Affairs magazine.
And he talked about this hard road to a world order and, you know, how it couldn't be accomplished. The West could not be duped to immediately vote away our liberty. We were really too strong to be attacked militarily. So he talked about, really, I think, a philosophy that comes from Antonio Gramsci, the founder of the Italian Communist Party, infiltrating our institutions, you know, one step at a time, reprogramming our population, and then incrementally destroying our sovereignty. And I think a major step, of course, was NAFTA, but now with the free trade area of the Americas.
Hold that thought for just a moment here as we bring our other stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our special guest this evening, Kevin Bearley, and of course he's discussing his concern about the move towards world government passing through this phase of the NAFTA, free trade zone of the Americas, the free trade zone of Central America. This is all a stepping stone, as they have in Europe. First of all, they sold the Europeans, oh, it's just going to be a free trade zone between the nations of Europe. Well, we're going to have a few little rules, a few little governing rules, and suddenly they find themselves faced with the loss of all sovereignty, moving rapidly towards a European government that the vast majority of people don't want. But, of course, the people have been placed in positions of power over them through the reins of government, through phony elections, so-called democratically elected, but usually the CIA has manipulated those elections to put people into both political parties in all of those countries who favor what the people don't want. Why we find Europe rapidly moving towards a loss of sovereignty, forming a supranational nation, the European Union, and the same thing is really happening here in the Western Hemisphere. The American people don't want to give up their sovereignty, but the leaders of both politics, they have no loyalty to America. They have embraced the globalist dream. Both political parties are led today by people who belong to a society so secret that neither George Bush nor John Kerry would talk about what it was. After all, if it's secret, they can't talk about it. But where is their loyalty? Is it to America? Is it to their secret society? Or is it to the occult foundation of that secret society? Well, maybe it's nothing unusual if you've read Alexander Robbins' book about the Skull and Bone Society, Secrets of the Tomb, that they have all the Nazi memorabilia there. After all, Hitler wanted a new international order. and so do the leaders of Skull and Bones. So pick up the story there, Kevin.
Well, I think that a major step in completing this world government that these elitists, including Skull and Bones and other people, certainly they recruit through those organizations, the Rhodes Scholarships, is this FTAA. And when people hear that term, I found that many of them are very unfamiliar with it. It doesn't sound dramatic, FTAA, Free Trade Area of the Americas. They think, well, you know, what's wrong with free trade? But this is looming on the horizon. We're looking, according to the administration, trying to have this completed, even though it's been delayed somewhat, by the end of next year. And this is such a major step towards global government that it really is a major precursor to what happened, as you said, in Europe. They were sold a bill of goods. It took 5 decades from, you know, just free trade to having a constitution where the European Union is overruling sovereign nations. The people promoting this Free Trade Area of the Americas from both parties, it's a nonpartisan thing, openly admit that what they're trying to bring about is the same thing as the European Union, which means our American citizens have to realize we're talking about a rejection of the Declaration of Independence, a rejection of the U.S. Constitution, a rejection of sovereignty, turning it over incrementally to transnational organizations that we will not have any direct control over through our elected representatives. So we're talking, as amazing as it seems, about the destruction of our constitutional republic. And we have the opportunity to slow down or stop this free trade area of the Americas, but it's going to take a great deal of work, and people really are going to have to understand what it is, you know, where it came from, and where they're going. And, you know, I thought maybe we can address some of those things, and then, you know, as always, like you, I just go to the news, and you can go to article after article documenting what we're talking about. Even if you look at articles just in the last few weeks about how our administration, so-called conservative, is pushing this.
And I think it's so important people understand that the oldest trick, Nick, in the world is to have a distraction. So while our attention is focused overseas, and our young men go overseas to fight for freedom against the wicked terrorists, who incidentally are largely funded by Saudi Arabia, who, of course, we're working hand in glove with, why, of course, we're losing our freedom here at home. And, of course, once they can get this thing through, America, as we've noted, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, our sovereignty as a nation will simply become a remembrance of things past. And the fact you're not hearing about this is simply a reflection of the degree of control that today exists over what the American people think. So pick the story up there, Kevin, because we need to let people understand the war certainly is a terrible, terrible thing, but it is simply a major diversion, just as Vietnam was a major diversion to the things that were happening that changed America forever during that period between 1962 and, of course, 1974. So the same thing is happening today as we keep our vision focused overseas. We lose our freedom at home.
And it's really true, because anyone who, you know, questions anything about what we're doing in Iraq, Afghanistan, or what the federal government is doing when it centralizes power in the name of giving us security, our patriotism is immediately questioned. So then you begin to question the policies on things like the FTAA. Well, the first thing is people say, well, that can't be as important as the war. That can't be as important as whatever alert level, you know, our nation has, because every day we're told about the possibility of a new terrorist attack. So people, their tendency is to say, let's put this on the back burner, and yet this is the thing that is far more dangerous than Saddam Hussein ever could have been to us. Because if Saddam Hussein ever did have the capability to attack us, which, you know, is certainly nothing that's been proven conclusively in a major way, he can certainly be behind something like the Oklahoma City bombing, which I believe he was involved in, or his agents. But this is an attack directly on our constitutional republic, this free trade area of the Americas. And if you read the writings of those who originally conceived of it and what they're saying now, you can see that. In fact, it's interesting. You know, we're told that it was back in, 1994, Bill Clinton had this gathering where the FTAA was originally proposed. It actually goes back even further. The first one to talk about this type of common market was Fidel Castro back in 59, before it became obvious to everyone that he was a communist. So it's kind of a continuum. But the roots of the FTA plans were put in place actually decades earlier by insider architects who developed, you know, specific strategies. And they established an organization to build a network of insider allies in Latin America. And what's interesting is that the person behind most of these organizations is David Rockefeller, David Rockefeller's Council of the Americas. And also at the Summit of the Americas, and where the FTA was conceived and, you know, really developed, this was brought to fruition by the Council of the Americas. Again, David Rockefeller was the founder and honorary chairman. The Americas Society, David Rockefeller, chairman. The Forum of the Americas, David Rockefeller, founder. The U.S. Council of the Mexico-U.S. Business Committee, Rodman C. Rockefeller, chairman. The Council on Foreign Relations, David Rockefeller, former chairman. The Trilateral Commission, David Rockefeller, founder and honorary chairman. The Chase Manhattan Bank, David Rockefeller, former chairman. And the Institute for International Economics, David Rockefeller, financial backer and board member. Well, here we see that this supposed grassroots movement towards free trade has actually been brought together by one of the most prominent globalists and elitists, one of the most powerful men in the world, David Rockefeller, and his front organizations. And just that alone ought to put up a lot of, you know, red signs to anyone who's following this. And so I'm very concerned about this. I think that it's been amazing how well our republic has withstood all the assaults on it, yet we still have enough freedom to turn the tide. If we go into this full-blown, within a few years of it being ratified, I think we're going to see a radical, even more radical change in the United States, our economy, our political environment, than we've seen in the past decade, and things have moved rapidly in the past decade. So the roots of the FTAA come directly from the people you've identified for years, these international globalists.
Well, let me just point out, David Rockefeller is a dedicated socialist. Now, you have to understand that socialism is certainly a sincere, benevolent, idealistic theory, but it doesn't work without force, and somebody has to be in charge, and David Rockefeller will be one of those people in charge. David Rockefeller returned from China in August of 1973 after China had killed between 80 and 100 million people. And those of you who don't know about the Great Starvation, they actually systematically starved to death 30 to 40 million people between 58 and 62. And we have the documentation. Anybody wants to see that, talk to people who lived in China who met the survivors of that. But David Rockefeller, writing in the New York Times on August 10th, 1973, said, you know, the social experiment in China under the leadership of Chairman Mao is among the most important and successful in history. The social experiment in China under the leadership of Chairman Mao is among the most important and successful in history. You see, it was all simply a social experiment. Everything's a social experiment. He is one of the elite who leads the world. 20 years chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations. We actually have a video. It's called American Union 2005, and you hear David Rockefeller talking about the plan to unite the Western Hemisphere. He leads this movement to betray America, and of course, people have no idea that this is going on. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course we'll talk a little bit later about how you can get copies of this video, American Union 2005. What are they talking about? The loss of our sovereignty, the loss of our nationality, the loss of our freedom, the loss of our Constitution. And that is what the elitists, led by Nelson, by David Rockefeller, really want. But of course, behind this whole thing are these occult forces that have been there since the days of Nimrod and Plato and Alexander the Great. Yes, and even Adolf Hitler. So there is this dream, an occult dream of a new world order. And this is what our leaders embrace today, using America's wealth and, of course, our military power to force this on the rest of the world. As sometimes we pretend to be going along with it, and other times we oppose it, but it's all show business, sort of like the fight between Kerry and Bush. You know, both fraternity brothers are both very close, both going exactly the same direction, but boy, they put on a good show. So everything is perception. The American people must understand we're moving rapidly in this direction. So now, Kevin, as you analyzing this, and of course this move to consolidate David Rockefeller, you're pointing out, is behind this. And as I say, we have a wonderful video. It's called American Union 2005. You'll hear David Rockefeller talking for 15 or 20 minutes about this whole concept of uniting the Americas.
I'm going to have to get a hold of that, Stan. I don't keep up. You produce so much material, and so much of it I use and I need, because in addition to the radio show, we have grassroots activists, committees of correspondence, because people can make a difference in this. You know, it's interesting, so much of what these elitists are doing, they really don't want out in the public too much, but every now and then something startling kind of comes out in the general press, and you may remember, and some of your regular listeners may, former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, a guy I'm just sorry will never see brought up on charges of treason, but a member of the Executive Committee of the Trilateral Commission and a longtime power on the Council on Foreign Relations, called the vote on NAFTA the single most important decision that Congress would make during Mr. Clinton's first term. In fact, he acknowledged in the Los Angeles Times that passage will represent the most creative step toward a new world order taken by any group of countries since the end of the Cold War. Now, this was clear back under the Clinton administration. In the LA Times, he stated this and quite a bit more.
Well, would you like to explain to our listeners why the vote for NAFTA was so important? Because the average person out there really doesn't understand. So why was the vote for NAFTA so important to bring about the New World Order?
Well, in my opinion, the reason that George Bush was not elected to a second term, George Bush Sr., was because of NAFTA, that it was so critical for Americans to begin this step of accepting regional government, transnational government agencies such as NAFTA, this concept of the merging, in a sense, the integration they used, the harmonization of Canada, the United States and Mexico first, and then, you know, throughout the rest of the Western Hemisphere. If you remember, it was the Republicans who were pushing NAFTA, although they're supposed to be the constitutionalists. The opposition was in the Democratic Party.
Hold that thought for just a minute, Kevin. We've got to bring all of our other stations right back on board. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest is Kevin Bearley, and of course he was commenting that Henry Kissinger had been quoted in the Los Angeles Times just before the NAFTA treaty was signed. This was in the early 90s, I guess it was, somewhere in the 90s, as saying that the NAFTA treaty was the most important step towards the new world order that had ever taken place, or words to that effect. And so I was asking Kevin, well, why is it that NAFTA was so important? I mean, what is NAFTA? The North American Free Trade Zone is Free Trade Zone Association, the North American Free Trade Zone Association. What does that have to do with world government? And Kevin was explaining, and you go ahead and explain to our listeners.
Well, again, I'm explaining why I think George Bush was not elected is because this was so important. We know George Bush Sr. often talked about his dream and goal of a new world order. Now, these men are loyal to an ideology and to powers that are above them, and, you know, they are willing to step down even from the presidency in order to accomplish the objectives of those promoting the new world order. So before, again, going back to Antonio Gramsci, that had to be done incrementally, that the Americans would not in one fell swoop give up sovereignty, this was a major step in, for not the first time, but in a major way of getting us to accept transnational unelected government bodies. This one made up of Canadians, Americans, and Mexicans who have absolute sovereignty in certain areas over our nation.
But this was who erode that sovereignty to begin to put us then under a supranational regulatory body, the first stepping stone along that long downward path towards the destruction of national sovereignty completely.
That's right. And so here we had Bill Clinton running against NAFTA. He gets elected, and then he turns, and they could not have gotten NAFTA with the Republican president. But because Bill Clinton was a Democrat, he was able to use enough pressure, arm twisting, to get enough Democrats to turn on their public stand and to let that thing squeak by. Why? Because it's a major stepping stone to the free trade area of the Americas, just as CAFTA and these other individual free trade agreements we're making throughout not just the Western Hemisphere, Central and South America, but now even in the Caribbean and the Pacific Rim.
I think it's so important that traditionally, of course, the Democrats have been the party of the working man, the Republicans the party of the elite of the capitalist, and that's, of course, what they want you to believe. Actually, of course, there are people in both parties who are dedicated to neither one but to this internationalist dream. But, of course, by tearing down the tariff borders between ourselves and Mexico and ourselves in Canada, what we were doing was basically transferring our jobs to other countries, transferring our factories to other countries. This was the first step along this way to the destruction of the American economy, and that's why it was so important. If we're going to have equality, we're going to impoverish the American people, you have to start someplace. You can't do it all at once. You do it incrementally. And before long, just you lose a few jobs here and a few factories there. And as it happens, and then it becomes a little bit more rapid, and then the pace accelerates to where we are today. So, but this was long-range planning. They know what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know.
Well, again, in order for us to be harmonized with these third-world nations, they have to bring our economy, our standard of living, down to a third-world economy. And we see that happening before our eyes. At first, you know, we were told, well, we're losing our industrial base, but that's okay because we are now going to become a high-tech service-oriented nation. We just have to retrain our people.
Right, and you retrain them, but for what? For flipping hamburgers?
Yeah. Well, you know, at first it was supposed to be the dot-com, the electronics, but now we see that our jobs are both being outsourced to India, to China, talking about the high-tech jobs. And then they're also being insourced through the H-1B visas. And, you know, the result is not only have we lost our manufacturing base that used to allow a man to raise a family, have a decent standard of living, we've lost that. Now we have hundreds of thousands of high-tech trained people who are out of work as well, because we've imported foreigners, who are willing to work for a lot less, they have a lower standard of living, and we've exported their jobs. So basically, we see through NAFTA, we've seen a transformation of the United States. We are becoming no longer an independent nation with a single language and culture, but we've become more and more a socialist third world nation, and that's what they're preparing us for.
A multicultural society, they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to understand it. You've got to become informed and help us get the word out. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Kevin Bailey. He's one of the better informed people, the best informed people on these issues that I know, and he's been setting it for an awfully long time, just as I have. So Kevin is bringing out the fact that the whole idea is very, very slowly. You don't want to do it too quickly because the American people would realize, I mean, the elderly are going to be impoverished by destroying the value of their savings and, of course, by devaluing the dollar, and they're doing this purposely and intentionally now, as it said this last week in the Wall Street Journal. The administration is going to talk about a strong dollar while, of course, actually behind the scenes doing everything they can to drive the value of the dollar down. And, of course, as long as the Chinese yen is attached to the dollar, why, we can buy cheap imports. But what happens is very soon they're going to break that, and now the price of the imports is going to begin to rise as your income is going to be fixed, and it's going to buy less and less. And this is the real tragedy of what's going on today, a planned program to lower our living standards. How can we say that? Well, because I've read the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, came out of Rio de Janeiro in 1992. You can buy it for $65. The Global Biodiversity, fronted by the Cambridge University Press, 1,142 pages, or you can get the summary of it in the Sustainable Development Syllabus. It's very easy to read, but it's all there. We have to lower living standards. So that's what it's about, and pick up the story from there, Kevin.
Well, you know, I wanted to kind of hit on a couple of issues. We've been talking about NAFTA as a precursor to FTAA that people like Congressman David Dreyer says he calls a super NAFTA. And what, again, the purpose of this is to dissolve the United States, integrate us, they use a lot of nice terms, with all of the other nations of the Western Hemisphere.
How did you ever get him reelected down there? That man has betrayed the people, the conservatives who've been supporting him for years, and become a member of the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations. He's on the wrong side of almost every issue now.
He really is.
Re-elected? How could that happen?
You know, but he won by the slimmest majority since he was first in Congress in 1980, and one of the key issues was that the Democrat running against him, a woman who I would disagree with on a lot of ideas, came out opposed to the free trade area of the Americas, opposed to NAFTA, saying we have to reject it. She is opposed to illegal immigration, and she made those key issues and ended up with a lot of constitutionalists, Republicans, and others helping her.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Kevin Bailey, and we were just talking about David Dreyer, who I've known. I've eaten with him. I laughed with him, but that was 20 years ago, before he betrayed everything he stood for, joined the Council on Foreign Relations, became part of the ruling elite, and, of course, he was targeted by the groups down there because of his support for the illegal immigrants. His key position back in Washington, D.C., with the administration back there, intent upon pushing these moves to do away with our national sovereignty and to destroy America, betraying all of his conservative principles, which he well knew, because I remember talking to him about it 20 years ago when we ate together and sat together, and now, of course, he's part of the ruling elite. He's compromised everything he stands for, and now it comes out that he has sort of an incestuous relationship with one of his aides. Did that come out down there during the election?
Yes. Now, the individual running against him didn't make a major issue. The last person who ran against him came out with it. There was a major expose in the LA Weekly and in some of the other, LA Weekly's not a gay paper, but the Doug Ireland who wrote that, I'd had on the air before. He's a liberal, but he actually sometimes sounds like you and me when he investigates some of these issues, documenting the international corporations and whatnot. He came out with quite an expose. A lot of us suspected it for a long time. And then the guys who are responsible for Governor McGreevy being outed and several other Republicans resigning, they did that on the Internet.
They outed David Dreyer because, of course, talk about hypocrisy. I mean, he's himself gay and he's back there leading the charge against the promoting anti-gay legislation, simply pandering to his constituents.
Right.
Whereas, of course, he's been outed by the gays as being gay himself. I'm surprised that that wasn't enough of an embarrassment to want to do, for him not to run. But
well, you know, the newspapers in this area are owned by one group. There's three newspapers, and they have very close ties to him, and they've been protecting him. There's even been talk of some organizations suing them to find out why they are covering up, what do they know. But even on the Internet, I was able to hear David interviewed. I believe it was at the Republican convention by a gay talk show host who asked him directly, and they posted this on the Internet, "Are you heterosexual?" He continuously refused to say, "Yes, I'm a heterosexual," and then left. I think he knows he's kind of between a rock and a hard spot, that it's going to become even, you know, more acceptable, because I'm not convinced anymore that he would lose a lot of votes, although much of his base called themselves the values voter. But, you know, at first I thought maybe the reason for his radical change was that he was being blackmailed over this. I don't know. That was just speculation. I met him back in the 80s.
You're about the same time. We both knew him together at the same time.
Yeah, well, my wife met him when he was running. He's just 2 years younger than me. In a mall. He was, you know, this young, nice-looking guy handing out literature saying, "I'm running for Congress," and we had a leftist Democrat. She brought the flyers home, and I said, "Wow, this guy sounds like our kind of man." We did our precinct work. He didn't win the first time. The second time he did. We handed out his voting record with a group called Tax Reform Immediately. He even spoke before that group, thanked that group for helping him get in, became a close friend of Congressman Larry McDonald, a staunch constitutionalist back there as a Democrat from Georgia. And Larry kind of became his mentor for the first few years. Larry, we know, was neutralized on that flight 007 to...
I would call it murdered, but that's
right?
All right. Or he may not have been murdered. He may be in a prison someplace, and many of us...
I think that there was good documentation that he was kept alive for some time in a prison. What his status is, I don't know. But then, you know, all of a sudden we began to see this radical change, and David Dreyer was one of the most influential people in getting NAFTA through. And now he's bragging. He was on an ABC major talk station here in the L.A. area. There's a good guy on there, a guy named Doug McIntyre. Very unusual for being on a major station like that, who was exposing David Dreyer and actually pushing a candidate running against him. David Dreyer boasted to him that we are going to get the super NAFTA pushed through in the next 2 years.
Well, because I'm not even concerned about the fact he's a homosexual. I'm concerned about the fact that he's betraying this country.
Yeah, what's dangerous is not his homosexuality. That's a sin problem, in my point of view, between he and God. I think it's a major problem of character, and of course those people are open to blackmail. But what is dangerous is that, in fact, he went to a funeral just a few years ago of a friend of a lot of us who are involved in this movement, because they were the people who originally helped him get elected. And he openly told everyone there who was asking him, he says, "I am an internationalist," that he wears that label, and he wears it proudly. If you go
he's willing to betray his oath to uphold our Constitution.
Yes.
His loyalty is not to America, but to this internationalist dream. And, of course, there is a spiritual problem with that, just as there is a spiritual problem with homosexuality. And that, unfortunately, the two of them seem to so often go together. Now, there's some very truly conservative homosexuals who are very loyal to our society, but in David's case, obviously, he fits into the other category. And there really is a spiritual force behind this move towards one world government. There is a spiritual force of which consumes many homosexuals.
There really is, and you know, I address that. There's a website, if you don't mind me putting out.
You go right ahead. In fact, let's get your information out so people know how to get in touch with you and your information.
Well, our website is www.welchreport.com, but there's a website I go to pretty much daily called newswithviews.com.
Hey, well, that's Paul Walter's website, of course.
Yes. In fact, I think I've seen your commentaries up there before, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you may very well be right.
And I have one up there right now, if they'll go to newswithviews.com, and I talk about the importance of maintaining our vision. And I bring it up because you brought up the spiritual aspect of this battle. And I addressed that, and I addressed the fact that we must recognize that all is not lost. It is not too late, even though there is great reason to be concerned and even be discouraged. But we need to recognize that this, in my view, this battle for this new world order, global tyranny, is a geopolitical manifestation between the battle between a righteous and holy God and Satan and his evil, you know, demons, or however you want to address them. It's between those who are honor God and those who reject God.
Well, I think what people must really understand is that, although this may sound like just the words, it's really the ultimate in truth. Satan has always wanted to rule the world.
Yes.
And, of course, this is what it's all about. He wanted to replace God. He wanted to dominate the world. And, of course, this is what motivated Nimrod and Plato and Alexander the Great and Napoleon and Adolf Hitler and the people who are working today to bring about this one world order. If you've read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you'll find out that you can trace almost all of them back in one form or another to these occult secret societies dedicated to one world government, but they have their origins in the occult, in these Luciferian organizations. So many of them, whether they know it or not, are working for the prince of this world. And the prince of this world is not the Most High God. It is Lucifer himself, who would claim a kingship over the world, and people better understand that we're moving rapidly towards that one world government.
We really are, and it does not, in my opinion, have to happen. I think God has withdrawn judgment from nations before, and I really see this as God's judgment, just as in Joel's time. Remember, there was that army of locusts that were, you know, just destroying the land, eating everything. The cattle were starving. And Joel referred to it as an army of God. These people had rejected God as sovereign, and yet he told them, if you would repent and turn back to God, I will draw this judgment. They did repent, although it only lasted over, I guess, a little over 100 years. They ultimately turned their back again. And so I see this new world order, this tyranny, as a judgment on a right from a righteous God on a people who are rejecting him. And that's important because we need to understand FDAA. We need to understand the roundtable groups and their offshoots like the CFR, the Trilateral Commission. But ultimately, we have to clearly see Satan behind it, that these people are people who have rejected the righteous God. Our nation, in my opinion, was blessed because at that time there was a great turning back to the Bible, people wanting to seek out God and his truth, not necessarily follow, you know, some church hierarchy, but to turn back to the Bible. And our founding fathers recognized that God was a higher authority than government and that men needed to be in submission to, you know, biblical principles. So we need to keep that in mind. That doesn't mean we shouldn't look at this other stuff, because these organizations are the tools of the evil one.
Amen to that. And it was certainly the gentleman who formed the Rhode Island, William Penn, who said those will not be ruled by God, will be ruled by tyrants. And how many people really think that our the people who lead our government are ruled by God today? Oh, they may talk about their prayer, and of course they may say all the right things, But never judge a person by what he says. Look and see the end result of what they do. We've got Roger calling from Pennsylvania. Roger, you have a quick comment?
Well, a question for you guys.
Okay,
you
go ahead.
If you could help disentangle this, and an excellent job. I hope you get back together again soon. Now, my question, not too complex, is on the one hand, you have the true Austrian school free marketeers, which might beg a second question, but they point out that this so-called free trade of the Americas is nothing of the sort, that the fix is in, etc. And on the other hand, you have at least the ostensible theoretical base for the Republican apparatchik's position is based on this same school, yes? And then so, that begs the question, and then you have, I guess you'd call the groups like American Enterprise Institute, maybe preeminently, and maybe to a lesser extent, Heritage Foundation, sort of provide the pseudo-intellectual rationale for this free trade that isn't. Could you disentangle all that, please?
Well,
did you want to go ahead and disentangle that? How do you, of course, get the Ludwig von Mises School, the Free Enterprise, the American Enterprise Institute, and all of these other groups, and how do you put together what they're doing? Certainly he lumps American Enterprise Institute, Heritage together. So they, of course, are in favor of free trade. They think this is wonderful. Then how do we understand who these people are? Who comes from the American Enterprise Institute? Dick Cheney comes from there. The whole project for the New American Century, the people who really dominate the current administration, come from the American Enterprise Institute, which is a neocon organization. So do you want to tie that?
I agree. I think that there is a philosophy of free trade. Now, whether or not the free trade area of the Americas or NAFTA have anything to do with free trade is the question, and I say resoundingly no. For free trade, you don't need thousands of pages of regulation. For free trade, we don't need to set up transnational regulatory agencies with their own courts, their own enforcement units. If you want to trade with someone, you know, from Mexico or someone, you don't need government, to create that by really assuming power. And I know that there are people who believe totally in free trade. I have never, I believed that for a while until I was exposed to William Gill, who pointed out that our founding fathers set up a system to fund the federal government through a general tariff, not a specific tariff. And I think that the founding fathers were very, very brilliant.
I think that the major point that Kevin is making is so wise that the founding fathers of America set up tariffs because they wanted to protect our industries, because they wanted America to prosper. The best way to destroy our industries is to take away the tariff and put our workers who are making a good living wage in competition with the people in China or in Mexico who are working for a couple of dollars a day. Even Adam Smith said that you could not have free trade if you had people in different areas of the world working at entirely different wage levels. So this free trade is really not to encourage trade. It is to destroy the living standards of our people, to impoverish our people. And as far as the American Enterprise Institute and the Heritage Foundation, they're both globalist organizations posing as conservative. They're really not. Their loyalty is not to America, but to this internationalist dream. The New World Order, the New World Economic System, the New World Currency, and, of course, the New World Religion. So,
yeah,
anything else?
I did kind of just want to throw this other caveat into that mix, is that they have to be exposed, really, for only selectively appropriating from the Austrian school when it's convenient to shoving this down our throats, yes?
Right.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, this idea, really, that these organizations are conservative is just not true. I look at the Heritage Foundation. It appears to have conservative credentials, and yet you look at the higher-ups on there, they definitely have members of the Council on Foreign Relations. They got rid of a few years ago when Bush first got into office this time. A man who was exposing communist China and their policies, because Elaine Chao, who became the labor secretary. She and her father are doing business with Zhang Zemin, have a business relationship.
And they were related somehow to Paris, weren't they?
And she was on receiving over $200,000 a year from the Heritage Foundation, and so she got a good patriotic guy fired in order to protect Red China.
And I think that sometimes you may think these organizations are conservative. They're not. Heritage was at one time, but no longer. And certainly the American Enterprise Institute is part of the problem, not the solution. Thanks so much, Roger. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up the program. And, Kevin, one more time, get your website out there. People know how to contact you.
Yeah, they can contact us through the Welch Report, welchreport.com.
Welchreport.com. Go there, get the information from Kevin is putting out. It's well worthwhile having. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Kevin Beerley, and of course the hour goes by so quickly whenever Kevin and I get together, and I would just comment we're going to be together on his program on Sunday evening. Where is that going to be, in case we have listeners in Southern California?
And I'm sure you do, and it will be broadcast on the Internet as well as on News Talk 590 KTIE, and that's in the Inland Empire. And we'll be on at 9 p.m., and, of course, it will be broadcast live on the Internet, so if people want to listen to you, they'll certainly be able to do that. They can do that through our website, welchreport.com, and there's right on the front page where they can click, and it'll take them to the live broadcast.
And so we'll be doing a live broadcast on Kevin's program, and I'll be the guest, and he'll be the host, because that's a great way to do things. Well, Kevin, we got about 2 minutes here. Would you like to sort of wrap up your thoughts for our listeners this evening?
Well, I guess if I was going to wrap up, I'd have to say that those of us who are on talk radio and using other means of communication discussing this rapid move towards global tyranny, we have to balance it out because, you know, people become discouraged. And I'm not saying I've never been discouraged, but it does not come from God. What we have to realize is that we have been blessed still with enough liberty to turn the tide if we will use our time, our influence, and our financial resources in the battle. We can still affect which direction our government will go. I encourage them to continue supporting Radio Liberty. You have a reach far beyond mine. You put out so much outstanding material, and those are our weapons. You know, Dr. Stan, people need to purchase those, not talk about, well, you can count on me when it gets bad to go out there with a gun. No, then it's too late. It's to use the resources that you make available, that we do, to educate and to turn that education into action. It's not too late. God can bless a people who will turn back to Him. And so we each have to do that. We each have to make sure not that God's on our side, but that we're on God's side, that we humble and seek His guidance.
Amen to that. Well, I think that's really so important. And really, this is a spiritual battle, as Kevin brings out so clearly. It's a spiritual battle that's being fought on the political, ideological, cultural, economic, a financial battleground, but it's still a spiritual battle. And until the people of the world recognize that, until the American people recognize that and realize without revival there's no hope for the continuation and preservation of our way of life. Kevin Beerley, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure. I always learn so much from you, and I look forward to having you on the air this Sunday.
Good night. God bless you. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed Kevin. It's always a pleasure having him with us. And let me just mention, we talked earlier about a video we have where you'll actually hear David Rockefeller talking about this whole idea of uniting the Western Hemisphere. It's called American Union 2005. That's American Union 2005. And you'll hear David Rockefeller going on and on. And of course, what a privilege it is really to have a footage like this made available to us by our good friend Galen Ross. So you'll certainly want to get that. You may be interested in Galen Ross's book, on the elite serial killers, going into the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, of JFK, RFK, and MLK. That's John Fitzgerald Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. Done a great job of getting information there. In fact, we have a four-tape set. It's called the JFK Assassination Update, and one of those is an interview with Madeline Duncan Brown, who was Lyndon Johnson's mistress and actually bore his only son. And Galen had put me in touch with her, and it's a wonderful interview, because she was there the night that they were planning the assassination of the President of the United States. And who else was there? Why, J. Edgar Hoover was there, Lyndon Johnson was there, Richard Nixon was there, people from the CIA were there. It's an amazing, amazing interview. And, of course, you have to understand that this whole thing was a coup d'etat. The American people to this day do not understand that they killed the President of the United States. They got away with it because they control the media. We used to have a book called The Missing Witnesses. Over 100 people who had, knew something about the assassination were systematically killed here in the United States. Let me suggest you get our JFK special. If you like, you can get the tape specially. We have a four-tape set, including an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. You'll never hear that elsewhere. And then, of course, our JFK update, the interview with Madeline Duncan Brown, and so many other people. Dr. Crenshaw, who was there at the hospital when they brought the JFK in. That's in the first tape set, along with Fletcher Prouty and Lee Harvey Oswald. The second one is Madeline Duncan Brown. And, of course, we have other information with Kennedy Special, all available through Radio Liberty. If you'd like to really understand what's going on, what's happening financially, we'd be glad to send you a free copy of our latest newsletter. Our October newsletter deals with the secret society that sent agents to the United States in 1640 to take over control of our government. So you've always had two forces here. You've had the Christian and you've had the occult, and people don't understand why all these bad things happen. After all, if weren't we a Christian nation? Yes, we were founded by Christians as a Christian nation, but the occult was always here. And, of course, the source of my information is not something written by a right-wing extremist or a left-wing extremist. It's in a book written by a Satanist. His name was Manly Palmer Hall. His book, The Secret Destiny of America, we just describe, we quote from what he says about how the secret society came to dominate the United States. Even has its emblem on the back of your dollar bill today. So the information is there. It's our October newsletter. It tells you about the formation of our banking system, the formation of the Bank of England in 1694, the most important date in all history, and far more important than even the Magna Carta, because, of course, the foundation of the Bank of England is the basis of the central banking system today, America's first central bank, and what happened when Congress withdrew the charter, and of course they destroyed the economy, what happened when Andrew Jackson opposed the renewal of the charter in 1832, they destroyed the economy and impoverished our people, and they're going to do that again in the not too distant future. You need to understand and begin to protect yourself. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, the number 1-800-544-8927. You can get all those other items we've talked about, and then pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty. Until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, good night. May the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. You can call in at the half hour if you'd like to. But right now we have is Chris Milligan, and Chris Milligan is a publisher. You know, as I look out across America, I find all sorts of people doing different things. Last hour we talked to Kevin Beerley, and of course what he's been called to do, and he's working with an organization in Southern California, and of course he does talk radio there, and he does so much research and does such a great job, and other people of course are doing research and writing books, and I have friends that write prolific writers of books. One of them of course was a Professor Anthony Sutton, who lived here in Santa Cruz, who was a mutual friend of Chris's and mine, and I think we're all indebted. Every American, whether they know it or not, is indebted to Professor Sutton because of his work pointing out that from the very inception of the communist regime in Russia, it was largely financed and aided and supported by the United States, creating the best enemy that money could buy. The same thing happened with Adolf Hitler. The same thing happened during Vietnam, as we financed indirectly the North Vietnamese so we could keep that war going until 1974 and transform America. Well, Chris has been called in a separate direction. I wish that we could clone him and there were more of him. He's been called to do book publishing, and he's put out a number of excellent and very important books. He certainly keeps in print Professor Sutton's important book on America's secret establishment, the story of the Skull and Bones Society. And then, of course, he's written his own book on Skull and Bones, The Fleshing Out of Skull and Bones. He's published Colonel Marvin's wonderful book on the Expendable Elite, the story of the Special Forces Unit, and Colonel Marvin's the first involvement with the assassinations and all the things that the Special Forces people do. And Colonel Marvin was a dedicated American soldier until he became a Christian and he realized that some of the things he was being called to do violated his Christian commitment. And so, and then of course Kevin has published a book, Barry and the Boys, by Daniel Hopsiger, going into the Barry Seal, the world's greatest drug smuggler of all time, and his association with the CIA, because the CIA is behind all of this drug smuggling, bringing the drugs in and then using it to contaminate and destroy certain segments of our society, but even more of that to raise the funds for the black operations that are being carried out, the assassinations and murders and
I didn't understand what my dad was telling me until I ran across Professor Sutton's book, America's Secret Establishment, which he wrote in 86, and I ran across it in 88. And that helped me to understand, because I had no frame of reference like most of us do. I mean, I had known that, you know, my dad had worked for the CIA and stuff, but I never really thought of him as a spy or anything like that, and he was just my dad. And then when he told me that, I figured, oh, well, this is kind of my dad's way of having a drug talk with me, and it didn't, and I had nothing to relate it to. And so, you know, I think back about it, and about my dad, you know, the CIA really didn't have to worry about my dad talking, because he could talk and he could tell, and nobody would believe him. And nobody would have any frame of reference, so there really wasn't any worry there.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Chris Milligan, who is, of course, is a book publisher here on the West Coast. And he's, of course, telling us about his dad. His dad has been a station chief of the CIA, been with G2. He was deeply involved in intelligence. And then one day he just quit intelligence, and later he told his son, Chris, who's our guest, that the reason he got out was because he was asked to be involved with drug smuggling for the CIA, and he wouldn't do it. He would not compromise his principles. Later on, he told Chris that Vietnam was really not about fighting communism. It was about drug smuggling. He told him that communism and the communist threat was all a scam. He said that there was secret societies working behind the scenes. And of course, Chris heard what his father said, but how could you believe this sort of thing? I mean, this is so far from the way we believe about things. After all, we went to Vietnam because, well, we were fighting the wicked communists. Now, nobody ever told you we were financing them all during the war, and we were never allowed to win the war. We could have won it at any time. I personally was told that by a four-star Marine general and by the ambassador, American ambassador to Vietnam, William H. Sullivan. I interviewed both of them, and they both told me we could have won the war at any time in 2 months, but we let it drag on for 10 long years. 58,000 American boys lost. 1 million South Vietnamese, 2 million North Vietnamese. It was all a scam. That is the great tragedy. Courageous men going overseas, risking their lives, and many of them giving their lives in a battle that wasn't fought to defeat communism, because we financed the enemy during that. By giving massive loans to Russia, was financing the North Vietnamese, giving the Russians the technology to build the planes that were being used by the North Vietnamese to shoot down our pilots and our planes, and of course to actually have the surface-to-air missiles and the radar guard and things. All American technology.
It's even more insidious than that. You know, I mean, my dad later on in life, he was a diaconal minister for the Methodist Church, and he worked in the church for the rest of his, for a lot of his life. And he did an interview with the local paper, and they asked him, well, what was about your life in the CIA? And he says, well, you know, I really didn't like it. I liked working for the church much better, because in the CIA, he says, the ends justifies the means. That's how they work. And, you know, when my dad went to go meet Colonel Lansdale in 1956, and Colonel Lansdale was one of the first Americans into Vietnam after the French were there, and one of the things that he did was he took over the Golden Triangle, where a lot of opium was produced, and he took it over in a shooting war from the French Secret Service and Corsicans, and my dad was there in 56, a little bit after that action had happened, and Colonel Lansdale was in control of the Golden Triangle. And I was I read Professor Sutton's book in 88. My dad died in 1990, and he'd been rather sick for the last couple of years of his life, and so I didn't really get to talk to him about it much. But I was talking to my mother when, you know, I started to understand it more, and I was very interested about this trip because they'd been in Vietnam and then they'd been in Chiang Mai, Thailand, and I was studying the subject of CIA drugs, and Chiang Mai is the second largest city in Thailand now. It's grown very, very big, and all the banks have, you know, branches there, and it's a heroin city, basically. And so I was very interested because they'd been there in 56. I wanted to know how big it was. So I was asking my mother, and I said, Mom, how big was Chiang Mai in 56? And she says, oh, well, it wasn't very big. About the biggest thing in town was the church. And then she got down her picture book, and she did a little of a sigh, and she says, and you know, and that's when I stopped believing everything I read in the newspaper. And I kind of picked up my ears, and I asked my mother, I says, well, why? And she says, well, because the newspapers there in Chiang Mai were telling them about this big battle that had happened in Vietnam, right where they had been the day before. And she said, there'd been no battle. We were having a picnic. And so I'm looking at my mother's picture books, and there's Chiang Mai, and there's a picture of the church and whatnot. And then I look at the page before, and there's a picture of my mother and my father and Colonel Lansdale and a bunch of military people. And it's off on the side. It says my mother with her name, and it says, out from Saigon with Colonel Lansdale with North Vietnamese military leaders. And so here, these guys, what they were doing was, you know, they were having a picnic. They told the world they were having a battle, okay, because then once you have a battle, then you got to choose sides, right? Because, you know, and somebody's the good side and somebody's the bad side, of course you're going to be the good side, of course. So they start these battles, and then they foment this conflict, okay, and then they take American boys, young kids, okay, and send them to hell for a year, okay, where, you know, 12-year-old girls and other people are offering them heroin for very, very cheap prices. And, you know, some of those boys in hell are going to get addicted to heroin. And they're only there for a year, and then they're going to send them back here, and they've got a built-in addict population. Okay, so the Vietnam War was a very cynical ploy. I mean, there was other things that were attached to it that made money. There was a PX scandal, there was a helicopter, there was all other kinds of things that they made money. But the main thing it was there for was for to create this a bigger heroin market in the United States. Because, see, the drug war has nothing to do with our kids, has nothing to do with our health. It has to do with keeping in place a black market, keeping a prohibition on these plants. Because if you go look at our historical record before, you know, when everything was completely, you could get anything down at the local grocery store, we had a less of a problem than we do now. And the same thing was shown during Prohibition.
You're talking about when you could buy narcotics at the local grocery store.
Right.
You could buy cocaine. There was, widely available.
I'm not saying that things are good or anything, but I'm just saying that by having a prohibition, it's been shown over and over again. When you have it, like, when during our alcohol prohibition, the age of the alcoholic went down. Okay, from before prohibition, you had some of your, you know, you had some alcoholics in their 20s. By the time prohibition had, you know, was well in place, you were getting alcoholics that were down to, you know, 14 and 12. Because when you are, you know, when you don't have any kind of regulation, the guy behind the bar doesn't care how old you are, and it's a cynical ploy to when they have a black market, they have three plants, and the secret societies tend to concentrate on the very addictive one, especially heroin, opium. You can sell these plants for, you know, 8 times, 10 times more than they're worth, and you create this huge amount of money that you can use for your black ops. But the other thing that it does, it corrupts the society, the system, from the top to the bottom and from the bottom to the top. I mean, you know, Dr. Stan, if you go to some southern county that's dry, you know, most people know where they can get a drink. And you want to know something else? The sheriff knows all about it too. And so it's a corrupting influence, that's why I'm very much of an ardent anti-prohibitionist. Because I think it's very much against our Constitution, and it could be dealt with much better in a health problem. I mean, look at smoking. You know, smoking has gone from, you know, Ronald Reagan posing as a doctor, telling us how great smoking is, to, you know, a lot less of the population smokes. And so I just, that's one thing that I talk about. But, you know, that's just part of it. I mean, you know, when I started to understand, you know, what Professor Sutton was talking about, and you were absolutely right, that all of us owe a great debt to what Anthony Sutton spent his time, you know, trying to figure out, well, how come these people are not letting me say what my research shows? And he started to educate us about the Hegelian dialectic and how the elites use both, you know, the left and the right, and get you into, well, now, if you're a member of this group, then you don't like those people over there, and they don't like you, and get us to fight each other instead of seeing, you know, how much that we're being controlled and manipulated and used and abused, and how they are playing terrible games with our children's future.
All right. For what Chris is referring to is the fact that everybody knows that the Hoover Institute is the center of conservative research in the United States. Everybody knows that except the people who know the truth. Professor Sutton was at the Hoover Institute, and he set out to begin to go into the background of the funding of Bolshevism. And he did a three-part series called Western Technology and Soviet Economic Development. And, of course, he had outside funding to help in this, but he was working at Hoover Institute. And, of course, after he got the first volume completed, which pointed out that communism had been financed from the United States and from Europe by people of great wealth from its inception, he was called into the office of the manager, the head of the Hoover Institute, and told that he would not continue this line of research. And I won't go into the background of how he was able to do that, but they did everything they could to shut him down. And then, of course, finally, when he went before the Republican convention in 1992 and testified before one of the committees there about how we were funding the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War, and when he got back to Hoover Institute, why they'd taken his name off the dorm and they disconnected his telephone. And
72.
72, right.
Yes.
And of course, this is how the system really works. I mean, you have a perception that this is an anti-communist organization because that's what you're supposed to believe. But the reality is, of course, there's a great deal of difference between perception and reality. We'll be back in just a moment with Chris Milligan, and of course, we'll invite your calls here at Radio Liberty at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hey, Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Chris Milligan. And Chris, go ahead and pick up from there.
Okay, well, I was just thinking there, I thought we were going to have a break.
Oh, no, you don't get a break in this. If some of the other programs, you get a break, but you don't get any break here. You got to work the whole time.
Okay, well, you know, the thing about Anthony is that, you know, that particular thing happened there at the Hoover Institute, and then he looked at it and he says, "Now, why can't I speak what you know I'm talking about?" So what he did was he did some research and wrote some books. He wrote Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, Wall Street and FDR, and Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. And then these books have been out there for a while, and then all of a sudden, he got a call and somebody says, "Would you like to see a membership list of the Order of Skull and Bones?" And Anthony didn't really know what the Order of Skull and Bones was, but he says, "Well, sure." And so some people sent him off a book, and he made copies of it and sent it back to him. And he put it down for a while and didn't really look at it. And then he had some time one day and was looking at it, and he says, "Gee, here's a bunch of the people that he'd already been writing about." And then he proceeded to do his brilliant research and put out four pamphlets, which then he put together in America's Secret Establishment. And, you know, until the Internet came along, you know, Anthony uncovered some amazing things. He uncovered the Harriman Bush and their connections to the financing of Hitler. He first talked about that in 1975 in Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. He wrote about it again in How the Order Creates the War and Revolution in 1983, and then again in America's Secret Establishment in 86, in The Two Faces of George Bush in 88, and then it was picked up by Tarpley and Chack in their book, The Unauthorized Biography of George Bush, where they expanded it some. And then John Loftus, who was a investigator for Congress, picked up and wrote about it some more in his book, Secret War Against the Jews. But nothing happened. It never got talked about in our media. It never got talked about. And then the Internet came along, and all of a sudden, with this, with the ability for the American public to actually talk to each other, without censors going before, a lot of this information started to become a four, and it finally had to be answered, and it got answered in an article in the Boston newspaper. And what they did there in the Boston newspaper was they started to lie and started to make up a story about it. And that story was picked up in another book about Skull and Bones by Mrs. Robbins, and then it was picked up big time in a book about Prescott Bush. And it's an example of how these elite deviants create false histories. And this is something that, you know, has been going on. I mean, we can trace it on this one particular story back into the 1940s. And then, you know, if you look into the creation of Bolshevism and the creation of communism, you can trace it back into the 1980s. And
hold that thought right here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Chris Milligan. We're talking about, of course, Professor Anthony Sutton, who was a personal friend of mine, and later he became a personal friend of Chris's. Professor Sutton used to live right here in Santa Cruz, where I live, and we had the opportunity to get together for lunch a number of times and go through some of his papers, and we have all of his books. In fact, we carry his book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, Wall Street and the Rise of Bolshevism, the Federal Reserve Conspiracy, Gold, and of course we carry his book that Chris actually pushes out, entitled America's Secret Establishment, going into the background of the Skull and Bones Organization. And of course, Chris was saying that you know, that the information about how Brown Brothers and Bush financed Hitler, that was Prescott Bush, who worked for Brown Brothers, Harriman Banking Company, later to become a United States Senator. They were, of course, Harriman was a Skull and Bones, Prescott Bush was Skull and Bones, and they were actually indicted for financing Adolf Hitler. But why should we be surprised? If you read Alexandra Robbins' book, and I'm sure this part of her book, The Secrets of the Tomb, are very, very accurate, she talks about all the Nazi memorabilia that you will find for the people who have actually been in the tomb. She never has. She was never be allowed, but there was somebody had actually gone in there to do some repairs and redecorating, and they commented, why all the Nazi memorabilia? Why, very simply, because, of course, these people were closely aligned with the Nazis. The organization came out of a secret society in Europe in 1832, and it was out of that same, these same secret societies of Europe that came the Thule Society, which was the very basis of the Nazi movement. And what was their objective? A new international order, the same as the objective of these, in my estimation, of the people who make up this this aristocracy, this secret brotherhood of the aristocracy of Skull and Bones. But they're simply one of a number of secret societies. They interlock with the Council on Foreign Relations and the Order of the Garter and the Club of Rome and the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission and Masonry and... But go ahead, you pick up the story there, Chris.
Well, we've just gone through an election, you know, and these elections are almost a, laboratory.
What would you call it? Just sort of a great show, a great production?
Right, right, a great production and almost a laboratory experiment of the Hegelian dialectic, okay, of, you know, when we look. Well, since I've been voting, since 1972, and during that time, we've had Richard Nixon, who was a protege of Prescott Bush, was put in place there under Eisenhower, who was another good friend of Prescott Bush, and then you had a couple bonesmen around him, Richard Moore. And then you had John F. Kennedy, okay, who, for, in my looking at it, a lot of John F. Kennedy, because if you look at some of the ducks that were put in a row for the Kennedy assassination, some of those ducks were put in a row before Kennedy was even elected, and Kennedy was put in place so that they could do the ritual murder on 11/22 of the killing of the king, of this virile, they've made into Camelot, into Arthur, which was made a lot through Skull and Bones, through Henry Luce and his Time Life organization. And surrounding Kennedy, you had a whole bunch of Skull and Bones people, Bundy and CFR people and all of that. And then you had...
But of course, Kennedy was not part of Skull and Bones. In fact, the only reason he got in was because his dad, old Joe, made a deal with the mafia to give him the Illinois and one other state. Kennedy wasn't supposed to win.
Well, I think a little bit of that is again kind of the play, because see, they can't have, you know, Republican. They got to break it up with Democrat, okay? And I truly think that some of these things, like May Brussel, an old conspiracy researcher down there in California, used to talk about the president is chosen 20 years ahead of time, and you had, you know. We had, Nixon and Watergate, and then you had Gerald Ford, who was a deke, another secret society that's related to Skull and Bones. And then you had Carter. And before Carter was president in 1975, he was at a Bilderberger meeting.
Okay.
And before Bill Clinton was president in 92, he went to Bilderberger in 91.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest this evening, Chris Milligan. Here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Chris Milligan, and we're talking about his experience, of course, as he looks at what's going on, and of course he's talking this evening specifically about Skull and Bones, one of a number of secret societies that are founded in the occult, and both George Bush and John Kerry, when asked by Tim Russert about the Skull and Bones, both of them said the organization was so secret they could not talk about it. Now, here people are running for the presidency. They both belong to the same secret organization that's so secret they can't talk about it. I mean, how many out there in the listening audience tonight have belonged to a college fraternity or a high school fraternity that's so secret you can't talk about it to this very day? That you are bound together, and of course there are a number of Skull and Bones people who've been put into the Bush administration, this administration, just as George Herbert Walker Bush, his father, had put many Bones people into his administration, because there's a bonding here. There is a secret bonding. There is a secret connection between the people who have sworn this secret oath. So pick up the story from there, Chris.
Well, you know, I did an interview with Anthony one time, and I asked him, I said, what do you see for the future? And he says, chaos, confusion, and ultimately a battle between the individual and the state. The individual is stronger and will win. The state is fiction sanctified by Hegel and his followers to control the individual. Sooner or later, people will wake up. First, we have to dump the trap of right and left. This is a Hegelian trap to divide and control. The battle is not between right and left. It is between us and them. The Spirit of God is within us as individuals. Skull and Bones represents death. It has no life spirit and pretends that the state is the march of God on earth. The thinking of immature juveniles, deadful and destructive, and has almost totally infected Washington. What to do? Find yourself and then go to work. Tell your friends and put out the message. The answer is within you. And you know, Anthony used to say, he says, you know, these people aren't going to be voted out. You know, what is going to happen is that their corruption is just going to be so much that the people are just going to stand up and say no more. And, you know, you're one of the hardest working people out there, Dr. Stan, in getting the word out there. And it is more and more. I mean, it was very interesting. One thing that by having John Kerry run as the Democrat, that meant that the Democrat couldn't use Bush's membership in Skull and Bones against him. Okay, so one thing that I've found out is that gee, as soon as John Kerry was the front runner, basically both Republicans and Democrats wanted me to be quiet.
Hold that thought right there.
Warn people about this.
Well, this evening, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, our guest is Chris Milligan. We're talking about the Skull and Bone Society, and Chris has actually got several books on that. One, of course, he's written himself, The Fleshing Out of Skull and Bones, and then he's republished Professor Sutton's book, America's Secret Establishment. But before we go on, of course, there are two things I want to do. First of all, I want to share something with our listeners. Now, there's a very interesting situation that you're not going to read about in your local newspaper. At least I haven't read about it in my local newspaper, but you'll find it on a website. It's called worldaffairsbrief.com. Worldaffairsbrief.com. It just was up there today. www.worldaffairsbrief. It's Joel Skousen's website. Apparently, the leader of the Green Party, the presidential candidate of the Green Party, which is about as far to the left as you can get, and the presidential candidate of the Libertarian, about as far to the right as you can get, have joined together and called for a recount of the votes in the state of Ohio, pointing out that, of course, the registered voters, there were a certain number of registered voters. Now, we all know that the registered voters, most of them don't, they probably if we get 60-70% of them voting, that's pretty good. But there were 90,000 more people voted in Ohio than there were registered voters. Now, whether those are registered voters or those that were supposed to have voted, there were 90,000 extra votes there. And we know that in certainly one area, and we have the clipping, anybody would like to see it, in one precinct with 800 people in the precinct, there were almost 4,000 votes, the majority for George W. Bush. So here we're obviously suggesting that something is not quite right. It's pretty hard to have 4,000 votes, almost 4,000 votes, in a precinct with only 800 people in it, wouldn't you say? And it's very strange to find that there are 90,000 more people voted or votes cast in Ohio than there were actually people registered to vote there. Think of the implications of this. Well, what we're suggesting is the voting process is a fraud. These things are rigged, and it's about time the American people understood that. And the audacity of these people to think they can get away with something like that. Well, of course, when you control the media, you can. But go up on the website. The website is worldaffairsbrief.com, worldaffairsbrief.com. Pull down the article, and then let's wait and see how soon we read about it in the regular newspapers. You see, they can't let the American people realize that the process is not open. Yes, you have a democratic process, and it's rigged from the very, very beginning. They wanted George Bush reelected. They got him reelected, and they don't care how the people vote. But they got to give you the perception that we are a democracy. Oh, it's a wonderful word, democracy. We're going to have to take America back, and they're going to have to help us. You must understand the media is controlled. You need to get the book of the New Media Monopoly by Ben Bickdaki in the 7th edition of his book. And then if you want to get to Chris Milligan's excellent book on Skull and Bones and all the other things he puts out as well. Chris, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, how they can get the books you have and about your websites.
Well, our publishing website is TrineDay.com, and that's TrineDay.com. And then we have a kind of an informational website also, CTRL.org. And they can always call us at 800-556-2012. And then I believe you carry some of our books too, Dr. Stan.
We carry Barry and the Boys, we carry The Fleshing Out of Skull and Bones, and we carry America's Secret Establishment. That's America's Secret Establishment, the story of the secret Skull and Bones Society. We carry Chris's book, The Fleshing Out of Skull and Bones, and then Barry and the Boys, and of course the picture on the front is worth the whole price of the book, because there you'll see Barry Seal, the greatest drug smuggler of all time, sitting with a group of CIA operatives, among whom is
Porter Goss.
Porter Goss. Gee, who is Porter Goss?
Well, he's a member of the Order of Book and Snake, which is right down the street from of Skull and Bones, and their little clubhouse is a three-story white mausoleum with no windows, four big columns on the front, the big black door, and it's surrounded by a fence that uses as the fence post intertwined serpent.
Well, now, before, though, what's most important about Porter Gross, he's a longtime CIA operative who dropped out of the CIA and went to just happened to get elected to Congress, just happened to be in charge of the Oversight Committee of Congress that was checking on the CIA. He's an ex-CIA operative who, of course, suddenly is at Congress supervising the CIA to make sure they're not doing anything wrong. And then, why, of course, when George Tenet resigned, who do you think they appointed to become the director of the CIA other than Porter Gross? You'll see his picture there with Barry Seal. This is a picture taken many years ago. Involved with drug smuggling in those days.
That's Isn't Operation great, 40.
Big pardon?
That's Operation 40, yes. That's right. A picture of Operation 40, right. And it's the drug smugglers and the fly boys and the wet boys. And Porter Gross joined the CIA, it's reported in the news, in 59 when he was still at Yale. And, you know, most researchers concur that George H.W. Bush was in the CIA right out of Yale.
Well, because he was the director of the CIA in 1976. Hey, we're going to have to, you've got everybody in the country calling us. The board looks like a Christmas tree. Let's go to Matt calling from Michigan. Matt, quick question.
Yes, I was wondering whether...
speak up, Matt.
Yes, wondering whether Chris has any info on a connection between Governor Carnahan of Missouri... murder, apparently, in Wellstone of Minnesota back in 2000.
Now, Wellstone was one of the senators who opposed the administration, whatever they're going to do, and his plane goes down, and what happened to Carnahan?
Carnahan was died in a plane crash, too, during a re-election campaign. I have nothing, hard evidence on either of them. I have read suspicious reports. And there, if we had a true free press, they would be doing some investigating, and it would be nice to have a strong republic and have some, investigative capability somewhere happening on it. But it doesn't seem, it's very sad to see all these conspiracy theories just fester, because any time you have something fester, you have all kinds of things that can develop, whether they be good or bad, and you never even know what really happened anyway, I wish that there was more public discussion on these things and more public investigation. Yes, there should be.
And Mr. Senator Tower, of course, he went down in a plane crash. Senator Imhoff, while the propeller fell off of his plane while he was in full flight, the propeller just fell off. I will tell you, Matt, when I came back from Africa, I had a plane, a beautiful little Cessna plane, and I loved flying. But I decided if I was going to get involved in this battle, I better give up flying, and I haven't flown the small plane since then. And I'd suggest anybody else who's doing what Chris or I are doing, you either want to take out an awful lot of life insurance or give up flying. Thanks so much, Matt. Anything else?
Well, Dr. Sam, real quick, there's a professor, James Petzer, University of Minnesota.
We know James. In fact, he's in our four-tape set update on the JFK assassination.
Oh, I'll have to order that. That's okay. A marvelous. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Sam.
Thanks so much. And, of course, that's the update on the JFK assassination. 2 hours of interviews with James Petzer. Fascinating guy. Let's go to Steve, calling from Albany. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
All right. Hello, Brother Stan, and hello to your guest. It's a pleasure to be on such a fine program. And I was just, a little bit concerned. My friend, who was trying to get the word out about Mr. Peruca running for president,
right. Even
went to the pastor's wife, and the pastor's wife really chuckled about it, said, you're going to waste your vote because, vote for Bush, he's a Republican. Did anyone else, maybe you or your listeners get the same response, like we're wasting our vote if we vote for Peruca?
I think you're wasting your vote if you vote for either one of the members of the Secret Society.
It's a fraud out there. You can't even, there should be, like 10 people up for president, different choices. It's a fixed system.
Well, I think it's what's so obvious about this, and I'll let Chris comment, but what's so obvious, if you watched the papers during the election, they kept talking about Ralph Nader.
Yes.
All of the media talked about Ralph Nader. He was only on 34 states plus the District of Columbia, and they kept talking about Ralph Nader and talking about him to draw votes away from Kerry. But, of course, both the Libertarian and Michael Peruca, presidential candidates, were on over 40 states. They could have won the election if they could have gotten the electoral votes. And, of course, not a word about them in the media because the controlled media wanted George Bush elected. And that should be proof enough in itself that somebody controls the media.
That's right. I mean, there was not one thing about Peruca in the... I read the papers all the time.
Well,
the only time we find out about Peruca is through your show and his website. It's a fix. I can't believe it. It's a pleasure to be on your show, and I'll keep on listening. I'm a faithful listener.
God bless you.
Chris, God bless you.
How was your... Thank you.
It's a sham. I mean, the elections are a great way to play on our hopes and our fears, okay, and to divide the population and to get us to... You know, think that, okay, if we're a member of this group, then we don't like those people and they don't like us. And it's to continue to divide the population so the elite deviants can, try and keep their movements on moving our republic into being a fascist state.
And, you know, I hate to say this, but I have a lot more in common today with a lot of people on the far left than I have with a lot of people on the far right. The Christian conservatives have abandoned their responsibility. They're blindly following the leadership of a man who claims to be a Christian, but I say don't take what a person says. Watch what they're doing. How do you justify getting us into a war in Iraq where, according to the latest figures, and you'll find these in the British Guardian, you'll find this in Reuters, you'll find it in the UPI, you'll find this in the New York Times and the Washington Post, and go up on Google on your internet and type in 100,000 Iraqi casualties. There have been estimated 100,000 Iraqis killed since we went in to liberate them. 100,000 Iraqis killed. You'll find that on the internet. It's amazing. Of course, it's not getting in the general media. Why? Why? Because they want to keep us behind the war.
Right.
Somebody's
right.
Responsible for those people dying.
Right. And television is a form of mind control. It runs at 60 cycles per second. I mean, television was developed in the 20s, but it just came out commercially after World War II in the hands of guys from military intelligence. And, Mr. Paley at CBS didn't have any money. He went to Brown Brothers Harriman and Prescott Bush. Prescott Bush raised the money for CBS and was on the board of directors.
Isn't it a small world?
Yes, indeed.
Let's go to Richard calling from Florida. Hi, Richard. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan and Chris. Dr. Stan, as you touched a few minutes ago, the best thing we can do is break this presumption that Bush is a wonderful Christian, and I think the best way we can do it is by educating ourselves how much the skull and bones of society has benefited from Bush's administration. Chris, could you touch on, for example, how many Skull and Bones owned and founded companies have benefited from Bush's administration? And also, I believe UNESCO was founded by a Bonesman. And
well, you have right now the Carlyle Group is one of the latest incarnations of companies that making money off of Skull and Bones and its activities. And then you have, Fred Smith, Federal Express. You have 11 people from Skull and Bones in the cabinet. When you go back and you do the research, you see where these intelligence agencies, and it's very interesting, if you follow the intelligence agencies, the guy who started OSS, Colonel Donovan,
right.
Yeah, he before he was working for the government, he was running the intelligence services for the Morgan Banking Corporation. And these intelligence services, they're really just insidious, and they have developed a lot in the religious area, and where they used these forms of religiosity as a mind control cult. And that's where they get people involved. It's sad to say, but some Christianity, they have infiltrated it with a cult type mentality.
And I'm an evangelical Christian. I believe in the validity of the scriptures, but I think it's so easy to utilize Christians because they blindly follow their leaders, and unfortunately, many of their leaders really do not understand the true essence of the spiritual battle which we're involved in. And I think that what we have to do is try to reach the Christians and make them understand the true spiritual nature of this battle, and that they have an obligation to stand for righteousness.
Right. It's like, there's a great book, The Secret Life of Ronald Reagan, and in there he is taken to a meeting and he is explained how that abortion and homosexuality are going to be used like bullets that are going to be shot into the psyche of the America's stomach, because the elite deviants don't really give care about abortion or homosexuality. Those are just things that happen, and they are something to hang divisiveness on.
Tell me about the book, The Secret Life of Ronald Reagan. Do you have that, or how could I get it? I've never seen that one.
If I remember correctly, there's another place there on the coast, is it Santa Barbara, Prevailing Winds Institute? I believe they put it out. Don Freed. If memory serves me correct, is the author on it.
All right, we'll try to track that one down. Sounds like an important book. Anything else you wanted to say there, Richard?
Yeah, there was a Bonesman who started the American Psychological Association. Is that accurate?
Yes, the American Historical Association, the American Psychological Association, and then the Bonesmen are very much responsible for bringing William Wundt, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, UNDT, and a lot of the starting of the particular type of psychology that we have here in the United States.
I mean, they've been into education, they're into banking, they're into corporations, they're in the CIA, they're in the military. Why, they're even into the presidency. Hey, thanks so much for calling. We got to go to Fred here, who's waiting patiently from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hi, Fred, do you have a quick question?
Yes, I'm waiting with rapt attention. Great show. I think that when you were talking about the election, they just came off, it just went on the air at Charlie Rose show, that soft pedaled the vast numbers of people that are complaining about the electoral process.
Hold that thought. We're going to let you come right back.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Fred calling from Pennsylvania. Our guest, of course, is Chris Milligan. Go ahead there, Fred.
Yes.
You're saying the Charlie Rose show is soft-pedaling this?
They were sneering and smirking at just the fact that someone would use the Internet and talk to another person, God forbid, and want something investigated.
I think that story, and anybody would like to see that clipping, I have it out of the New York Times, pointing out that 4,000 votes in this one precinct with 800 people, and the explanation was, well, the voting machine had a hiccup.
What does that mean, to have a hiccup? Aren't they supposed to be reliable? They use automated equipment to can food, and you don't want to get poisoned by that process failing, and this is automated equipment. It's not supposed to fail unless it's programmed to do something like that.
Well, you got to get the facts. I gave the reference. I don't know if you heard it, but the World Affairs Brief today had an article, and it points out that they're asking for a recount in Ohio. Certainly Kerry wouldn't do that. He's been told just to sit back and we'll take good care of you. But the other two presidential candidates are asking for it because there were 90,000 more votes counted than there were registered voters. There must have been a lot of hiccups there. What are your thoughts on that, Chris?
Well, the thing is, you know, like last year on Florida, you know, they said, oh, it's all the Chads, it's an old magician trick, you know, you point at one thing while your other hand is doing something else. I mean, they were saying Chads, and they were saying, oh, well, let's go to electronic voting, you know, and we got electronic voting that some of these machines, they run on just portable PCs on Windows machines. I mean, those things are so porous, and they can be hacked so easy, it's not funny, you know, you have three major companies. One of them is very private. You can't find any information out about it. If you go back and do the research, you can find out that there's been questions about these companies for almost 20 years. The people who own them are shameless in their political aspirations. And in their political support, and it's a sham, and the psychological reverberations on a country when you steal the election are just amazing.
Well, I think that, Fred, we need to get the information out.
I want to buy some of those. Repeat the number when you get a chance. I definitely want to buy some of the books that have been advertised.
Well, no, of course, you get your number off one more time.
800-556-2012. And we also have some videos by Daniel Hopsticker, a great one called A Big Fix 2000, which helped start Bev Harris on her black box voting and everything. And so we can get you the stuff.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks so very much. Bye-bye, Fred. And bye. Well, our guest this evening has been, of course, Chris Milligan. Chris, thanks so very much for being with us. We really appreciate it. Have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Oh, doctor, you know, everybody pray for Dr. Stan, and, you know, and pray for our country and pray for our children, even pray for our stupid enemies here.
Yeah, amen to that. God bless you. Thanks so very
much. Thank you.
God
bless. Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. That was Chris Milligan. And, of course, we do carry a number of Chris's books. We carry The America's Secret Establishment. We carry the Barry and the Boys. We carry his book on the Expendable Elite. And probably another couple of books. If you don't have one of our catalogs, you can go up our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Or if you just call us at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Request a catalog. We'll send you one free of charge. And, of course, if you'd like a copy of our October newsletter, which takes you into the background of the secret society that was formed in America in 1640. By a group of Satanists from Great Britain. They were Rosicrucians, but the secret of Rosicrucianism is that Lucifer is God. He's the one who gives you real freedom. Oh, the old God of the Bible. He got all these rules, thou shalt not do this, that, or the other thing. But, of course, if you worship Lucifer, you have total freedom. Trouble is, of course, you're going to spend eternity in hell. If you haven't seen our videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. And I'll tell you what, we at a conference, we sold out of the 10-hour version of that. We must have sold 20 of those. And it is an unusual experience to watch the videos. You can get the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. We recommend, if you really want to know what it's about the truly demonic aspect of what's going on today, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. We are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men. And there are all sorts of secret societies out there. And, of course, you can get more information by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, we'd be glad to send you a free copy of our October newsletter. And, of course, from the explanation of what the Satanists say about this secret society to the formation of the Bank of England and 1694, and then, of course, the formation of the first bank of the United States in, I guess that was 1791, and the second bank of the United States in 1816. A fascinating story that you're not going to hear elsewhere. And, of course, then fast forward to what's going on in America today. It's a very provocative newsletter. That's the October newsletter. If you'd like a free one, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And then go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And there, of course, you can pull down all of our old newsletters, and they're well worthwhile reading. You can actually go ahead and listen to our live programs there. on the Internet. You can listen to our archive programs on the Internet. You can actually look at the various items we sell. Incidentally, we do sell the big Berkey units, and they will filter out in case of a nuclear attack. They will actually take out the radioactive dust particles, and that's what you have to worry about. But you're also going to have an extra set of filters if you're worried about a nuclear attack, because the filters will become radioactive after a couple of weeks, and you don't even want to have them on there. You want to set them aside. You want to, but you certainly will want to have not only the regular Berkey filters, but you'll probably want to get an extra set of filters to have on hand. Go to our website. You can get all sorts of information up there. That's RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And then, of course, please tell others about our radio programs. Tell them about our ministry. Encourage them to listen to our programs on the shortwave, on the Internet, and, of course, to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle. And so until, well, Monday, I guess we'll be back again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.